Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/turniton to get started. Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, and entertainers. If you listened to episode 48 of this show a little while back, you might have heard me talking to my friend Jody Amon, who is a leading psychotherapist in her field. We talked about her book called You Won Anxiety Zero on that show. You can get the audio version of that book on Audible, and Jody even reads it for you. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/turniton. Again, that's audibletrial.com/turniton for your free audiobook.
This is Turn It On.
Ken Block from the band Sister Hazel, and you're listening to the podcast Turn It On with my very good friend, Michelle J.
Dude, it's Michael.
Are you Michael J?
Michael.
You sure?
Yes.
Michael J.
Hello, and welcome to episode 57 of Turn It On. My name is Michael J., and this is my podcast. We are coming to you, as always, from beautiful Nashville, Tennessee, the center of the musical universe. My good friend Nick Nanton is making his second appearance on the program today, but before we get to my chat with him, I need to take care of a little business here first. We have a brand new website at tiopod.com with a brand new merch store as well. We have t-shirts for men and women in all sizes with pull-down menus to mix and match shirt and logo colors, and there's a pretty big selection there. We also have coffee mugs, hats, and hoodies, and you can also buy my most recent records and my latest EP directly from me there, so I encourage you to do that. We're trying a company called Dizzy Jam out for the merch at the moment, so if you order something and have any kind of comments about it whatsoever, if you're not satisfied for any reason, or if you're extra satisfied, if the stuff shows up, looks great, feels great, fits great, please drop me a line at mj@tiopod.com, or you can reach me on the contact page at tiopod.com and give me some comments. We would also love to see you wearing our merch, so please feel free to send a photo or two our way, or you can post it on your Instagram page and tag either at Michael J. Official or at Turn It On Podcast so we can see you modeling our swag. Either way, keep in touch with me and just let me know how we're doing. Hey, everybody. This show is a labor of love for me, and I've always worked very hard to deliver meaningful content of only the highest quality for you. My advertising budget at the moment is $0.00, and in the current climate of podcasting, it's getting harder and harder for independent shows like mine to get noticed, and even harder to attract sponsors to monetize things so I can start possibly making a living doing this thing, or at the very least, supplementing my income so that my time isn't quite as stretched when I'm trying to put the shows together. This is where I ask you to do me a favor. If you're a listener of the show and you've enjoyed it, please subscribe to the feed on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, and also take a quick minute to leave me a review on iTunes. This not only helps with ratings, but it also helps other people find the show. I'm sure there's an absolutely huge audience for this thing that's just waiting to discover it, but I can't get there without your help. I've also set up a Patreon page at patreon.com/turniton. That is patreon.com/turniton. And I've only set up a single pledge tier, which is just $1. You can definitely give me more, and that would be amazingly awesome. But if a few hundred of you pledge at $1 or even $2 a month, it'll start to lighten the load a little bit. And there will be no rewards for those pledges on Patreon at the moment, but if the response is good enough, I'll be able to start generating bonus content for people who pledge, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there. And the last thing you can do to help out is to tell your friends about the show. Word of mouth is always the best advertisement, so start talking about it, posting about it, sharing it to your social media pages, and all that kind of stuff. And hopefully, with a small amount of effort on your part, we can start growing the audience for this thing, and I can keep doing it. Thank you all so much for sticking with me here, and thank you all in advance.
Hey, this is Luke DeJanes. I just finished eating tacos, and now back to Turn It On with Michael J.
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, my dear friend Mr. Nick Nanton is on the program again, making his second appearance. He was on the show back on episode 28, so you can go back and listen to that one if you're so inclined. Nick has been one of my closest friends going back almost 20 years now. He was my personal manager at one point, and we've done a ton of work together over the years. When he was on the podcast last time, he had won 5 Emmy Awards for his documentary filmmaking, And as of this moment, he now has 11 Emmy Awards, and I'm sure many more on the way. He currently has a program on Amazon Prime called In Case You Didn't Know with Nick Nanton. And as you'll hear in our talk, Larry King was his first guest on that show. And he's also interviewed Maria Menounos, Anthony Scaramucci, and others. So I encourage you to go check that out when you get a chance. Nick was in town doing some songwriting with an artist named Joe Bryson. And I met up with Nick and Joe and another of Nick's colleagues, a guy named Kevin, for a quick dinner. And then we all went to Nick's hotel room in downtown Nashville. And we had this talk right before they went out on the town for the night. I need to issue a little disclaimer here. About halfway through our chat, Nick and I talk about one of his latest documentary film projects, a film called Operation Toussaint, which is also available on Amazon Prime. The documentary follows former special agent for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Tim Ballard, and his special forces team as they go undercover in Haiti to bring a ring of sex traffickers who bribed their way out of jail to justice. It's quite a heavy subject, and Nick goes into great detail about raiding the brothel in Haiti to rescue the children there. If you're extra sensitive to this kind of topic for any reason, please be forewarned that some of the subject matter is quite disturbing, and even I had a very hard time not losing it while Nick talked about it. It's a very emotional thing, but also very comforting to know that there are people out there like Tim Ballard who are putting themselves in harm's way to rescue children who are being trafficked and are moving heaven and earth to put an end to this horrific plague. So, having said all that, I'm going to get out of the way and let you hear this talk. This is me and my friend Nick Nanton. You've had a chance to sit down and interview Larry King, and you're also doing some other work with him.
Yeah, so I interviewed Larry for, well, I wanted to interview Larry. I wanted to make a documentary on him, but his best friend, he had already promised that to him, I guess. So I said, well, Larry, will you just let me interview you for my internet TV show? He said, sure. So I created one. So I made an internet TV show. And then I told my editor, I'm like, hey, make this like a doc. And so he did. He did an awesome job. And I said, I called Larry. I'm like, Larry. It's like, hello. I'm like, Larry, this is not anything like we talked about. So I want to come show it to you. He's like, come bring it to the house. So fly to LA because I live in Orlando area. Right. Fly to his house. And then he watches. He's like, this is excellent. So we start talking about it. I'm like, well, how about this? We never really talked about this, but I want to do a series like this where it's like the new generation of talk show. I call it a docu-interview series.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And why don't you just partner with me? I want you to just become an executive producer. He's like, done. What do you want me to do? So he's like, I'll introduce anybody. I'll do whatever you want. So he's the executive producer on the show. At this, as of this taping, it's called In Case You Didn't Know with Nick Nanton. It's on Amazon Prime. It's an Amazon exclusive right now.
Okay.
He'll probably go some more places. But so Larry ended up being the first episode.
Right.
Rami, my cinematographer, okay. Talking about, yeah, I made right. him the second episode, tell okay. his story. Third episode we're editing right now is Maria Menounos. The fourth episode is Nito Cobain, who's an incredible guy. The whole idea was sort of like someone you do know, but you don't know everything about him. Someone you don't know, but you should know.
Yeah.
And that's sort of every other. And then I just finished interviewing Anthony Scaramucci in Vegas at his big conference for his episodes. And fascinatingly amazing.
Like?
He's amazing. Dude, like 3 years before he ever got involved in politics, I read one of his books called Hopping Over the Rabbit Hole.
Uh-huh.
One of the best business books, or I think just books about life in general. He's a brilliant guy, Harvard Law School, like brilliant guy. I'll just put it this way. He's just a character. He's who he is unabashedly.
Yeah.
And he's by no means a perfect human being,
right?
But I think like anybody else, the media got a hold of him, tore him to pieces. But from my experiences with him, genuinely a very nice guy, very brilliant hedge fund manager, lawyer. If you were in a fight, you'd want him on your side.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I think a lot of things are like that. The media has a tendency to skew a lot of things
everything,
that way
yeah.
to where it's unrecognizable by the time it
hits.
Well,
right now, look at the media landscape. I mean, everybody's basically competing against clickbait. Let's leave it there. So
that's true, yeah.
So you got these headlines that are super sensationalistic that all you got to do is click a button and you can allegedly read the story and you can be on your phone and in Facebook and some organization or some page you opted into 2 years ago and you didn't know their political agenda, you didn't know who owned it, you didn't know all that. What it like comes up in your feed and it's people you've heard of and people you know might be successful, you might be a little jealous or whatever, and like you're clicking on this stuff. And so regular media has had no choice but to sort of get in the fray.
Yeah, right.
And so it's become extremely divisive because in my mind they've just had to pick a side and try to pander to that side so they can get viewership and numbers, because all traditional media is from my understanding, is all struggling. I mean, I don't look at the numbers all the time, but it's definitely it's a thing.
I'm curious to know, man, like, you're rubbing elbows with people like Larry King and all these people. Do you ever have moments where you're like, holy shit, what's happening? Or I'm out of my depth here? Or do you kind of rise to the occasion and put yourself as like, kind of look at them as peers?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know I'll ever look at them as peers, because that's just not me.
No, right.
Like, I was taught to really respect, you know, those above you, and like to serve people.
Yeah.
So to me, it's always like, even when I meet someone on the street, my first inclination is going to be to put them like in a service mentality.
Sure.
Like, how can I serve these people? Like, let me help them. So let me, I'm not a butt heads kind of guy. I'm like, hey, how can I serve you and elevate you? So I don't know if I ever see that, but there's definitely moments where you're like, now that was freaking cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is like, how do you have the balls to like sit across the table from Larry King and propose anything to that guy, really, like working together or anything?
I will tell you, it's worked for me in everything I've ever done in my life. And some people, excuse me, just don't get it, I don't think. But it's like, because I was trying to serve Larry King. I was like, hey, Larry, I think this could be a cool thing we could do together. I'm not trying to take advantage of you. I did everything I said I was going to do. I actually changed it up a little bit, but instead of just going and doing what I wanted with it, I called you, and I didn't say all this stuff, but he got it, came to your house and showed you, made sure you were okay with it. Now, all these things I didn't tell you about that I brought to you as a further opportunity, are you interested in partnering with it? If Larry King would have said, Nick, that's not what you told me you were going to do, you cannot put that out, I said, okay, no problem. But I took the risk, knowing what I wanted to create in my head, thinking I could do something that he would be proud of.
Yeah.
And I did. And so it's just always about, look, I call it the value equation. Life is about an exchange of value.
Sure.
So it doesn't matter who you are. You're constantly trying to exchange value with the person on, I hate calling it the other side, but the person that you're collaborating with. So like, what do I bring to the table to make this work for the other person? Sometimes it's a favor you did 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's, sometimes they just want to give back.
Right.
But it's just like, the way you get things done is by approaching them from like, hey, what can I do for this person that's novel and would actually bring value, as opposed to like, I mean, you've seen it before, like the emails, like basically they don't say it this way, but it's sort of like, you owe me this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I don't owe you anything. Like, you've worked with enough people who are like, oh, you should do this for me. No, I shouldn't. Like, I'm on tour for 200 days a year,
or
I've got a family of three, I got a family of five, I'm making 12 documentaries right now. Like, if anyone emails me and says, hey, can you help me out? I'd be like, yeah, how can I help you?
Right.
But like, if anyone emails with like, not like, can you give me $100 for the bus? Like, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I do that sort of work too, don't get me wrong, but like,
I've seen it.
Yeah, well, okay. Would you help me with this? And if someone, like, we were talking just recently about a mutual friend of ours, a very famous songwriter guy.
Yeah.
And someone emailed like, hey, I'm writing a book on this topic. Do you think this person would be willing to sit down with me? I'm like, you know, so I emailed the guy. I'm like, hey, look, guy came across totally honest. He told me exactly what he was doing. Your call, but I don't see anything fishy about it. And he's at a point in his life where he's like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And the guy freaked out. He's like, oh, you said yes? I'm like, yeah, because he just can't. He approached it from a point of view. It was like, it wasn't BS. It was just like, here's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll be willing to help or not. And I answer like all those emails.
Yeah.
The ones I don't answer are these bizarre things like, you should give me a scholarship and pay for everything.
Right.
Whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I feel bad because I'm sure the guy in Nigeria who emailed me probably could use a scholarship.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you just got stuff going on. You can only do so much. You get worried if you're getting scammed or whatever. So it's just all about, how can I serve? Like, I've interviewed Mark Cuban and Richard Branson. Richard Branson hooked me up probably more than anyone else when everyone's trying to just ruin my interview with him, these different organizations. And I emailed Richard and like, hey man, this is what's happening. He's like, you find me wherever I am, I will tell everyone to go away, I will stop right there and give you 15 minutes. But like, it was just because I had rapport with him and I had always done what I said I would do. So I found there are a-holes in the world, don't get me wrong, but for the most part, people who are successful, typically, I don't know, the ones I've been attracted to, I guess, and just sort of not try to be more important than them or be what, just say, hey, man, what can we do together? How can I serve you? And sometimes it takes 20-30 times. It's like, yeah. You know, I mean, look, I'm in Nashville right now. I've lost the most money in my life writing music, like of everything I've ever done. But like, I refuse to quit. Like,
yeah.
I will die or have hit songs. Like, those are my two options. One of them is one of them is guaranteed to happen no matter what.
Yeah.
The other one is going to happen or I'm going to die.
Right.
So one of the two. But I found two of the things I've learned the most about success, I think the number one ingredient for success is self-awareness, number one, out of anything.
Yeah.
And number two is just being the guy who stays longer. Because guys who you and I know, I started coming up to Nashville in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And you started coming to me shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those guys that we came up with originally are still coming?
None of them. Yeah,
right?
None of them. Yeah. I'm fascinated by your process. I talked about this a little bit with you before dinner, while we were waiting for dinner earlier. Just the way you approach things. And I'm trying to take some notes because a lot of it is, to me, is applicable to what I'm trying to do with this show.
Yeah.
Is like trying to up the cachet of my guests and trying to grow it and get it bigger and bigger.
Well,
and bigger.
You're welcome. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, I mean, no, but I mean, sir, I'm, you know, certainly, truly, you are in the top 10% at least of some of the most accomplished people that I've spoken to. I mean, the list is not super long yet, but
it is. You're doing a great job.
You mentioned something, and I'm trying to take it all in because for me, it's a new way of approaching things. I'm just not used to it, and I marvel at the things that you've done. And I think I mentioned this to you on the last time we talked. It's overwhelming actually to see the things that you accomplished. I just go, how the hell is he doing this? You know,
I'm equally overwhelmed, by the way, by the way you play guitar or piano or like. It just, here's the thing. I was talking to Kevin about this. Kevin's in the room here.
Yes.
On the way over here, that like the things that we're the best at, we mm-hmm. take the most for granted. And that's the thing
sure.
that everyone writes off. You're like, oh, like for you, it's like, oh, I just play guitar. It's like, no. Like 99% of the world can't do that.
Right.
And even the 10% that can't.
Right.
They can't play like that. And so, like, we're writing today. Joe Bryson's in the room, too. We're writing with these guys. And they're so musical. Like, you're musical in a way that you think and, like, ooze music in a way that, like, I couldn't hack my way through if I tried.
Uh-huh.
So the rest of this is just understanding what your gifts are and not writing them off.
Right.
I think that, and that's the self-awareness part. It's like that. That's the big deal.
Yeah.
And so don't, like, you're going to underestimate it because it's boring, because it's you've done it forever. It's just, you came out of the womb that way. It's like, oh, it's what I do. It's what everyone does.
Yeah,
it's not, right?
Yeah, I get that. But it's just just the way you managed to navigate your way. I mean, I don't talk with Richard Branson. For me, like, if I was sitting across from that guy right now, I would just be dumbfounded. What would this guy want to hear from me that he hasn't already heard from a million people? You know,
and that's the question. And so to me, whenever I approach a guy like that, like, I know he's heard it from a million people.
Sure.
What can I do differently? So I first was introduced to Richard by a mutual friend of mine, Kevin's, Joe Polish, an amazing connector, really good dude. And then I wanted to leave him, like, I wanted to do more with Richard. And so I FedExed him an iPad and I put a video on. I was like, hey, Richard, Nick Danson, we met recently. I'd like to do some stuff, blah, blah, blah. And like, hey, email me anytime, call me anytime, but here's what I have in mind, whatever. I didn't hear back from him and I saw him maybe 2 years later, and he's like, you're the iPad guy. I'm like, yes, I am. I'll own that. And I've used that strategy, by the way, to do millions of dollars of deals with people, because it's on one hand, it sounds crazy because it's like a $400 thing, but if there's like millions of dollars at stake, he at least recognized that I was willing enough to invest in a relationship with him to send him $400 in an iPad with not asking for anything in return.
Right, yeah.
Like, okay, so that's number one. That's one in, I don't know how many million would do that for Richard Branson. And he's like, sought after dude.
Yeah.
So like, to me, it's like, how do we remove? So usually the sticking point in all these things is money or time, right? Like, those are like the two most valuable things.
Mm-hmm.
How can I remove those things?
Right.
Like, how can I make it a thing where I'm not going to try to be overbearing. I'm not going to ask you for your money, number one. Like, let me just take that off the table.
Yeah.
And number two, how can I make this super easy for you? And so I just try to think like, what would make this different than the other million guys who wanted his time? And sometimes I fail miserably.
Right.
But the more you do it, the more you realize, oh, wait a minute, this guy, actually, the best thing I could probably do maybe would be send his wife 10 dozen roses, and then he'll never forget you because you met him when he was with his wife and everyone else was looking past his wife. You had a 10-minute conversation with his wife, not in a creepy way, but like while he was doing interviews, you were talking to his wife and you just hit it off and you just sent him 10 dozen roses to give to his wife and said, hey, your wife was awesome just for hanging out with me. Here you go. you're hooked up. Yeah. And he's, you know, I didn't do that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, just realizing the currency of the situation.
Right. Yeah. I guess it's just those little things that you, like, that I don't think in those terms.
And until
yet.
you don't have to.
Yeah.
And when you talk to somebody who has everything, how do you give somebody who has everything something? And so you have to be super creative, because it's not about money at that point. And that's actually when it's the most fun, because it's not about the scarcest resource. It's actually probably about, for you, it's figuring out what's the resource I have the most of.
Right.
Maybe that's like going to waste that I could utilize to, you know, to give a gift of thoughtfulness to somebody, to this other person.
Yeah. I think a lot of people put up these roadblocks in our heads, you know, like I'm doing it right now with this show, especially as I'm just, it's the podcast right now is just on my brain 24/7 because I'm trying to find ways of growing it and that kind of thing. But I just put these mental roadblocks up. And do you have maybe some pointers that you could give me to like kind of tear some of those walls down, or maybe take me out of the way I'm thinking in the particular box that I'm in right now and get me out of that so that I can, you know what I mean? Like, so I can.
Yeah. So let me talk around it, because I get in that position all the time, by the way. Like when I'm interviewing a Larry King or a Mark Cuban and I'm in their office and I see everything around them, I'm like, oh, how do they get to this? It's like, I could never do that. Like, I don't. And all of a sudden, you basically go from being a rational human being to an irrational, scarcity-minded human being, because this is not, because I wasn't called to be Mark Cuban. Like, that's not what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And so I would just say that whatever the next steps you're supposed to take are very evident.
Mm-hmm.
They will be very evident to you when you need to take them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't live your life taking, you know, risks, I don't mean like jumping out of planes or whatever you're into,
you
know, like for me, like entrepreneurial business risks, right? We'll put them that way.
Sure.
They're not gonna be money related, but like if you don't step out and take those risks, like those things will never happen. So I was mentioning earlier, we're endorsed by multiple major brands, and most times it's just been me emailing somebody there and being willing to understand, like you told me about an email you got earlier, like someone's like, you know, that's a nice kid, thanks for emailing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You just gotta go, okay, maybe not my time, but that doesn't stop me from emailing. I'll just keep emailing, and I'll find someone eventually be like, either they'll be like, you're annoying as hell. Like, we will do something for you just so you leave us alone. Or like, you'll find someone who you connect with. And at the end of the day, like, everything happens through relationships. We all know that.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes there's just not the person with the right relationship that you're ever going to connect with. You just got to wait for them to go. You just got to wait them out. Like, they're going to go away.
Yeah.
They're going to go away. Like, and so I would say that you are intended to achieve your highest and best purpose, and you're already equipped for it. Jack Canfield, we talked about earlier, from Chicken Soup for the Soul, he says, I don't know exactly how he says it, but I'll say it my way.
Yeah.
Like, God won't put anything in your mind that you are not equipped to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
But you might have to become a different person. Well, you might have to gather different skills than you have right now to accomplish that.
Yeah.
But you can always accomplish it. But that's the scary part. Because when you get those big dreams, typically the older we get, the more we're like, that's too big for me, I can't do that, or that's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We stopped doing the things we did as a kid, which would be very malleable, and just go ask the person for the chocolate cake we never met, because we want chocolate cake that chocolate cake seemed like an obvious answer. Now we're like, well, I don't know that person. What's Jim going to think if I ask for the chocolate cake? And Susie, you know, she paid for the chocolate cake, so there's no way I can ask for the chocolate. So we have like 100 different barriers that don't exist.
Yeah,
and
right.
So it's really, but you have to be willing to take steps out on faith in a fearful way, because if you're inside your comfort zone all the time, you're never going to reach the level of growth you should. So it's, you know, do something that scares you every day.
Yeah, I'm trying. It's
doing a great job.
Well, thank you very much. No, it's difficult. And I look back on things I did when I was 21 and 22 and the balls I had. And I think to myself, there's no way I would have the balls to do half the things I did back then, you know? And I don't know what that is or why that is. Do you have any idea of why we do this as we get older? Is it like we want to be more protected? We want to be more safe?
Man, I don't know if I've ever talked about it this way, but here's what I've really realized. You know, see people who've been in a bad spot for a lot of years like typically, look, again, I don't mean to be like, I didn't grow up rich or anything, but way richer than probably 90% of the world,
sure.
Right? Because we live in America.
Yeah.
But like, and my statistics are terrible too, by the way, so you can knock those off
cool.
too.
That's good. We don't have fact checkers yet.
Exactly. I'm exploring all these things and just trying to figure out what does it all really mean. But I would just say, like where you are in life typically,
mm-hmm.
look, there are catastrophic events that happen, cancers, like things that you can't. So I can't speak to all that. But right. let's say like outside of, like in the normal realm of where most of us live, I think most days that are relatively healthy, have good opportunities, haven't been, you know, massively abused mentally. So I can only speak from that place. But I think where you are today is based on a series of choices for the most part you made.
Absolutely.
And those choices could have been, man, they said no, so I stopped asking because it really hurt my feelings when they said no. Which, okay. And so I would just say that I think most of us get something, if you stick your finger in a light socket, it hurts.
Right.
You don't really
right.
want to do that again. Now, that's something you shouldn't do again. But certain interactions in life end up feeling that way. And the person on the other end of the line or the email typically has no clue it affects you that way.
Yeah.
And so by sort of decoupling it from that, but most of us start making safer and safer decisions to avoid that feeling.
Yeah,
I would say that I think that that's why most people end up there.
That makes sense.
You learn as you get older, like, oh, this is way more comfortable than that. And if I have a choice, I have a brain, I have a choice, like I'm going to choose this. But I think to me, it all comes down to, and there's been plenty of books and podcasts and everything about it, about your why. Like if the why is important enough, like I talk to people all the time who want to become a public speaker, but you know, public speaking is the number one fear over death. And I always tell them the same thing. I can't remember, my business partner Greg and I talk about this all the time, and I can't remember if it's his idea or someone's or mine. I don't remember, so I don't take credit for it. But the idea is this: when the message is important enough, you and your ego will get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like if it's something that you're sharing because of you, you'll always be afraid of it.
Right.
If it's something you're sharing because you know, no matter how much it hurts you or it's going to help a million people, you can't help but share the message. So when it stops being about you, the rest is easy. But it's all about that mission and the
Interesting.
Why.
Okay.
But if you don't have the why, it's just the ego. And why bother?
I think my biggest problem is, and close friends of mine will echo this a million times, is that I care too much about what other people think. And so when I go into those situations of maybe asking somebody to be on the show, you know, particularly famous person that said no. Yeah. It's one of those things where you go, I asked a few friends favors for that thing.
Yeah.
And that was the hardest thing in the world to do for me. I don't like doing that because I don't want them to think that I'm trying to use them as a stepping stone towards anything else.
And the good news, I know those friends of yours and they don't. But second of all, it's just that, you know, empathetic to be concerned about what other people think about you. But I heard something the other day, don't what other people think about you is their business. Don't get in their business.
Sure.
Like, and so all I've learned over time is, if I'm doing the best I can do every day and my mission is to help people in what I'm trying to do, like, it's not always gonna, the stars aren't always gonna align. First of all, half the time, the more famous they are, the more people get in the way who have no idea what you're really trying to accomplish, and they don't even ever get to make the decision. You know, I put it, it's a maybe not a exactly good parallel, but I'll put it this way. Someone told me a long time ago, like, if you share like your goal or your vision, your dream, whatever you want to call it, someone, and the first thing they don't say is, how can I help? And it's typically not what they say. They typically say, like, well, I don't know, Michael, get a real job, like whatever, right? Music's not, it's because that's your dream, not theirs. That dream is for you and you only, and you're the only one who can accomplish it. So you can only expect those who care about you truly to be defensive of, because they don't know how to do that. They're like, no, you can't do that, because they can't do that. So it's people, so we all sort of typically over time, I think we sort of get dulled to these experiences. So I don't know. That's my two cents.
Yeah. I think it's been like, 2 years since we did the last one? It doesn't feel like that long, but it's been a couple years.
It must have been.
You had 5 Emmys last time I talked to you. You now have what, 11?
11,
Just stacking those Emmys?
And we do what we can.
So yeah, you've done a lot since we talked last time. So what's been...
I got a call from my friend Russell Brunson. He said, hey, would you make a movie about child trafficking? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, about human sex trafficking of children. I'm like, well, first of all, I think God would strike me down right now if I said no, that I wouldn't like promote ending this whole thing. And so I didn't know what I was getting into, actually, but he sort of told me about it. I talked to the guys in charge, and it's really interesting. They had been sort of taken... how do I say this politically correctly? They hadn't been really treated very well by another production company.
okay.
that came in and made some movies about human trafficking, but it made the producers the heroes instead of the guys who actually did it all the time. Right?
Okay.
So they're a little leery. And then we came in, and so I went to film with them in New York City. We filmed behind the scenes in Broadway. Miss Saigon is a story about trafficking. And then we went to Salt Lake City. We went to L.A. We went to all these places. And the story started with this kid named Gardy, who was a U.S. citizen who was abducted from a church in Haiti.
Okay.
And I was like, hey, I need to go. And his dad was still there, like, searching for him. Like, and so I'm like, I got to go to Haiti to interview this guy, because that's, like, the impetus of the whole story. So, like, okay, cool. So when do you want to go? I'm like, I want to go, like, January, whatever. So I had to call, like, a week before we go. And the guy who runs the organization is called Operation Underground Railroad, a guy named Tim Ballard, and he's a star.
Okay, yeah.
He's like, great news. I'm like, what? He's like, we're going to do a raid. I'm like, what does she speak of? And so he filled me in, and I didn't tell my wife, but she slept well for 2 nights. We went to Haiti, and they said, hey, we literally trained with Navy SEALs. They're all ex-SEALs, but we had to work with the Haitian government because these guys have no authority there.
Yeah.
But a bunch of ex-SEALs and Special Force guys, and we trained for 2 days, did recon in the middle of the night, and we ended up arresting the biggest child trafficker who is supported by organized crime in Haiti. And it's a movie called Operation Toussaint. Now, that was what they called that operation, because there was the guy who started the slave revolt in Haiti. That's my understanding anyway. And so his name was Toussaint. And so it's on Amazon now. Well, I just found out last week, actually. Just over 250,000 people have watched it on Amazon, so that doesn't stink. It's something like music, doesn't pay any money, but it was fun. It was a really unique experience. You know, you're in the middle of the night, you're jumping out of a raid van with guys all around you with machine guns and stuff. And like we were all flak jacketed up, and me and my camera guys, and it was a once and only once in a lifetime experience. Then they're like, hey, we just got this done. Now everybody leave now. We're like, what do you mean? They're like, we don't know what happens next. So we all bailed out, and we were all fighting for the same flights, because there's not that many flights out of Haiti. And so it was a very sleepless night, but we got out safely. And I told my wife what I did when I got back. And she's like, you did what? I'm like, did you sleep well the last 2 nights? She's like, yeah. I'm like, you're welcome. And she didn't like that answer. So, we did that since I last saw you. But it was one of the most eye-opening nights and like experience in my life, that there are people who are that evil, like that happens. We sort of broke up this ring. We actually, we GoPro'd up some officers who ran in this bunker where this woman was holding these girls. And the boys too, by the way, but these girls that we rescued. And
How many kids were?
There are four in the brothel when we got there. One of them was in the process of being raped. We actually got it on GoPro, and we just turned it straight over to authorities, like, I don't want anything to do with that footage. Just use it to prosecute. It was terrible, but it just opened my eyes to what there was, and that there were actually people fighting this, because they told them, like, hey, why are you going to Haiti? It's the most corrupt place in the world. It's like, well, if someone doesn't help these kids and start helping, like, who will? So there was a raid van, and the funniest thing about this is that the guy who drove the raid van with all the Special Forces guys, he was just a taxi driver they hired for the week. And so they're like, you guys gonna ride in the raid van? I'm like, well, how many of us can you hold? He's like, we can take one of you guys. And so I had two camera guys and me. I'm like the guy in Office Space, so what exactly would you say you do around here? I don't operate camera, I don't edit, right, I don't write it, I direct, it's great. And so I'm there with the two of them. I'm like, well, if you can't all three fit there, we're not going to go there. And Rami, one of my main guys, he's a host of a show on Discovery now called Mummies Unwrapped. He's on Ancient Aliens. He's a big Egyptologist. And
he's your cinematographer.
Yeah, he's my main DP. I have like three or four main directors of photography. Me and Rami have made a ton of the most movies I've ever made together. And he's on everything I do. It's amazingly talented guy. He's Mark Burnett's favorite director in Hollywood now. He started, you should interview him. He went to L.A. He fled Egypt during the Muslim Brotherhood Revolution. And his wife is white from Maryland. And he had to cover her head. He had to run over a guy who was trying to get him with like a sword and sneak out of Egypt. And he only got out really because his family was fixers in the movie business. They did. He produced his first Egyptian documentary at 13, I think. And so they knew all the guys to pay to get the gear in. And all. So there was four people on the plane when he left, and him and his wife and his kids, and then like two other people on the whole plane. He got out just in time, and he came to America, and he was getting $50 to do kids kids' birthday parties because he couldn't get hired for anything. And I met him through another mutual friend, and we started doing work together, and he won his first Emmy with me, and he's won multiple Emmys since. But now he's Mark Burnett's favorite director. He's directing a new show for Amazon. I don't think I can say it yet. They just finished his first season of a show on Discovery Channel as a host, Mummies Unwrapped. But just he was with me. He's like, I want to go in the raid van. I'm like, look, dude, we can't all fit there. We're staying together, and we're not heroes. We're not trained for this.
Right, yeah.
We're just trying to film it. I'm trying to keep you out of trouble. So we decided we're going to ride with the Attorney General of Utah. We're like, must be safe. Well, we got out in the raid, and this guy's head was on a swivel. And what we didn't realize is he was the first guy in Haiti to say, I'm going to end corruption. So, like, everyone wants to murder this guy.
With this guy.
Turns out we're in the most dangerous van there is because we don't have any of the special forces guys. We're the Attorney General. We figure we're good. And so we go to Haitian jail that night, my first and last time in Haitian jail. I think they painted it before we filmed, but it was super nice. That was my experience in Haiti.
What sort of stuff did they have you, like, how did they train you for this? What sorts of stuff did they have you doing?
So we had briefings first of all, they're like, hey, in Haiti, you can't arrest people after dark. There's like this thing.
Really?
Yeah. I don't understand it all, but it's sort of like there's laws, but maybe not.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, maybe.
There's laws, but maybe not.
So, and I've been to the Dominican Republic, which is the same island, but very different country. And they're like, so we're going to try to find this lady here. There's a guy with us who had spent 2 years in Haiti on a mission. Uh-huh. He was a Mormon guy. And he had spent, so he learned Haitian Creole, and he sort of knew where this main lady, the biggest trafficker in Haiti is a woman. And two of the girls we rescued were abducted after the earthquakes in Haiti. We didn't know when we arrested her and rescued them.
Yeah.
It was right after midnight, and that was literally the either 7th or 8th year anniversary of the Haitian earthquakes.
Right.
And they got them into aftercare, and they started talking, and they said, our parents were killed in the earthquake, and this lady said, I'll take care of you.
And she just
took
them in.
And she put us into a life of sex slavery. And so, you know, they're being rehabilitated and finding a life, and they actually, it's crazy, because when you rescue someone from that sort of a life,
yeah,
they actually tend to sleep for like 3 or 4 days straight.
Of course.
Because their head's been on a swivel for years.
Right.
So they just sort of can't process, but they just sort of shut down and like get some rest. And once they sort of came to, they said it's the first time in their life they actually were like had hope and had like some dreams. Because you know, they're like 3-4 years old when they had a dream of like someone taking care of them. Yeah. And they took advantage of them. So we did like different, we did a bunch of scenarios, what was going to happen. And so they're like, look, everyone here is not Rambo. Everyone here is not a hero. The cool thing about Haiti is like, there's nowhere to run to. Uh-huh. So they're like, we really don't expect like someone completely opening fire on us or like what you might see in America. Like, we don't expect that.
Yeah.
So we should be okay. But the problem is we're going to get into this little neighborhood called Patientville. It's like it's a very sort of a touristy neighborhood outside of Port-au-Prince.
Right.
And it's still dicey, but there's a lot of sex tourism there. And so they rented 4 rooms at the hotel in my name for some reason. Thanks, guys. And they ran the rooms in my name, and we were flying drones trying to find, like, do recon to see if she was out. We had done recon the night before in the van. And so we had done just a bunch of like, hey, there's going to be all these guys are SEALs, you know, SEAL team, Rangers. So like, there's a block van up there, there's a block van in the back, 2 vans in the middle, raid van, AG, because he's going to like make sure to get, you know, press charges, and we get the girls to aftercare. And it was bizarre, man. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. They executed really well. The Haitian guys, they've now, this organization, Operation Underground Railroad, runs a Haitian, in Haiti, they run like a training center to help stop trafficking and help combat it. But you know, most of these guys on this raid, I think it was probably their first as Haitian police officers or whatever. They had done like police work.
Yeah.
But they hadn't done like, you know, like military, like Navy SEAL style raids. And it was crazy.
That sounds really intense. Yeah. I've seen more awareness trying to be brought to this topic. Like, how big of a problem worldwide is it?
So it's a huge problem. And I'd say, so there's like the things you've heard about, like, you know, there's sex tourism in like Thailand and South America, Brazil, like the places you'd think it would be. I mean, there's definitely a lot in Haiti, where sick people from all across the globe who at some point, you know, pornography doesn't do it for them. I mean, very sadly, I would say it's like alcoholism or drug addiction. It's an addiction.
Sure.
And we have a culture where it's very easy to get. And I'd say there's people, after pornography gets old, and then they go to like maybe barely legal, and then they go like, they God. Go down that road, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
then eventually they're watching child pornography in the dark web. There's a place you can find it. And then eventually for some of them, that's not enough. They have to go experience it. Oof. Or they figure out in America, they make whatever money and they could experience it there because they, I don't know, it's all weird. But so there's that, right? And then there's like, there's other weird scenarios like a child being abducted and taken across the border.
Yeah.
But I would say other than that, like the best way I can explain it is like it's a spectrum. So it's everything right. from a guy at a mall buying a girl a dress if she'll just do a few favors for him and then maybe his friends or like whatever. There is grooming on Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff where like someone pretends maybe or they have a kid who's 15, 16 mm-hmm. befriend some sort of at-risk oh, other
so
teens.
They, so they have an actual kid that they, that yeah, they sort yeah. of send in.
Or sometimes
it'll
be a fake account. Sometimes it's an actual kid. Because like if you live in that neighborhood and the guy's like, hey man, I'll pay you some money. All you do is make
right,
friends with these
yeah,
girls.
Right, right.
And then get them to come to the movies with you. And like, hey, we've been friends on here for like 2 years. We never met.
And then
you
somebody, and then they just snatch them?
There's that or they drug them. There's that. So like that's, and that's like, and then now,
that's terrifying.
Like, it is. And then now, like Fortnite, they're trafficking kids on too, like the video game. Because anywhere kidding. There's a network,
anywhere
of people,
there's a network of, especially of kids.
The
yeah,
the ones that will make yeah. like even will blow your mind even more because everyone's like, I can fathom this is happening, but like not in my. It's happening in my state. You might admit, oh, it must be in the projects mm-hmm. or in like these places where it's really low income or
right.
or a lot of refugees, like yeah. whatever. Right? You make your own excuses to get away from it.
Sure.
But it's not happening like in my city. It's like, well, yeah, it is. Like, but so we're working on a movie on trafficking in America with these same guys right now called It's Happening Right Here, and the subtitle of it is like you know, in your city. You know, in your neighborhood and then in your home, ? Because another scenario I heard about was a girl moved to a new town. She was a little bit, and this could happen, girl, guy, whatever, mm-hmm. a little self-conscious, meets some guys who like her.
Right.
And one of the guys like, hey, I got to go practice. Can you take me home? And she's like, yeah. Sure, she takes him home. They end up, you know, sexually fooling around, whatever. He doesn't tell her and videotapes it. And then he basically says, hey, look, you're going to do what I want with any of my friends anytime I want, or I'm going to post this on the internet and show the world what a slut you are.
Oof.
So she lives in a gated neighborhood, suicidal for multiple years, because she's not going to tell her parents. She's so embarrassed.
Of course not,
and
yeah.
she doesn't want it on the internet. So it's like straight up in a upper middle class gated neighborhood. Dad had just been transferred there for a job
yeah.
transfer. Like, I don't know that part, but you could see it, right? Or mom, whatever, like good corporate career, moved to new town, putting the kids in the right school, and this stuff happens.
So it's like,
and
so, it's like sexual blackmail.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's the thing. Yeah. Like trafficking can run the whole gamut, as my understanding. Like, I'm not an expert, but
right.
I've dug into it way more than I ever thought I would.
Right.
And we just finished a movie that's coming out soon called Triple Take. They had already done the raids in Colombia, 3 raids at the same time on the same day with some really brave cameramen who undercover captured it all. And then we came in and went and did a bunch of interviews around the world
yeah.
and retold the story of the. It was the my understanding is the most successful child rescue in history. They rescued 126, I think, children in 3 raids in the same day at the same time. And it was one of the first raids in
Colombia. What's the age range of these kids? Are they teens, preteen? Are they young, real young kids? Or
yeah,
it just runs the gamut.
Four to whatever.
God, yeah. Man, that's really disturbing.
It is. And yeah. the great news is there's people really trying to do something about it, and it's becoming an issue now.
Yeah.
But I would just say, like, not that this interview is supposed to turn to that, but it's an important topic.
No, no. I mean, well, it's, you know, something yeah. you're working on. So
the thing is that just be aware that it's different than you thought it was. Like,
sure.
Or even most of the women you would see in like a prostitution district in any city,
yeah.
they probably didn't really choose to be there. Most of it was
right.
either abusive parents mm-hmm. or like things lead to that. So even if they're doing it of their own volition, if you will, Usually
yeah,
not.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, there's a bad series of circumstances that led to that. So I would just tell anybody, like, keep your eyes open. If you see something, like, weird on an airplane, a train, on a car, like, people's body language, like, we've, like, our human bodies have been evolved to have enough receptors of something weird happening.
Right.
If you think something's weird happening, it's better to just say something to somebody and let the authorities figure it out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the alternative is horror, because I will stop after this, but the average child, like in New York City, uh-huh. who is a child who's being trafficked,
right.
Is trafficked 40 to 50 times a day in 10 to 15 minute increments.
Ugh.
And so it's like a terrible, and then until they're basically used up and useless.
Oh my God.
And then
man.
They either become groomers, because a lot of kids learn that they can sort of get out of it if they can prove they're worth more than just themselves.
Yeah.
So it's just a sort of really terrible underbelly. The great news is that the redemption and the hope of those who've been rescued is actually, some of the stories I've seen are incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a thing that is, it's a thing that's some sort of on a spectrum that you would never guess. You would think you have a picture of what it looks like, but it's morphed into so much more than that, because, you know, human beings are ingenious. They'll find ways to do anything.
Yeah.
So.
And you can find Operation Toussaint now on Amazon.
Amazon. Yeah. On Amazon. Triple Take will be on Amazon. Probably the next year we're doing film festivals with it first. And then it's happening right here. We're starting production on early in 2020.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess in closing, I don't want to keep you, because I know you're in town. We've got friends here in the room, and you have a night out planned, and I'm like, I've commandeered the whole fucking crew and said, hey, let's watch me do a podcast. That'll be fantastic. I'm trying to think of how to wrap this up in a way, though, because we've gone all over the map here.
We have. We get hate mail for sure from someone.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I pride myself on the fact that this podcast can go in other places other than music. Turn It On is about what you do before you do a project. Everybody prepares themselves in some way. An artist prepares sure. to go on stage. A documentary filmmaker prepares to do those things. It's what we
do. By the way, the other answer I didn't get to is the reason I'm not that freaked out with Mark Cuban or Larry King, because I'm prepared.
Because you're prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you do your homework. Yeah, clearly. Yeah,
and I'm terrible doing homework, so I literally have people do it for me. And then I read the cliff notes, because that's my unique ability, is to prepare from cliff notes. Because just tell me the importance of it. You read the 800 pages and tell me what I need to know, and I'll synthesize and I'll make the questions from that or whatever.
Yeah,
but
right.
But if I had to prepare myself, it's never going to happen.
Right.
So I need to know, like, what do I need to read for the 20 minutes when my brain is freaking out because I'm interviewing Larry King in 20 minutes? What do I need to know right now to not screw this
up? Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, 11 Emmys speaks for itself, Nick, at this point, that you're doing okay. Well, but do you have any last time you gave like some little pearls of wisdom at the end of the talk that we have. Do you have any more like small little nuggets of wisdom you can impart on the people listening now?
So I'll tell you a story about, I don't know how many pearls of wisdom I got, but I'll tell you a story about an interview I just did for a documentary with a guy named Major Dan Rooney. He founded an organization called Folds of Honor.
Okay.
They've given $120 million in scholarships to the families of fallen soldiers.
Okay.
Amazing organization. And he's the only guy in the world who is a fighter pilot and a pro golfer. In the world. Like, he's just an absolute stud.
Okay.
Like, my wife met him last weekend. I'm like, stay back, honey. No. So, anyway, he's an amazing human being. And so, I did this interview with him, and he was like, look, he built this golf course and borrowed all this money, got all his friends to invest. It was a golf course that was going to support the organization. Yeah. And a week before it opened, they had a 100-year flood, and all the sod rolled down the hills. And literally, his whole life savings and everything. I'm paraphrasing, but like sort of went up in smoke and water.
Wow.
And so it took like another year or two to reopen the whole thing. But he was saying like, and whatever your faith is, you can equate it to this. But all I can do is talk about the way I know how. He's like, look, first of all, we all would love our life to be like this hockey stick growth curve. And every day we wake up and all we do is win. You know, that's what we think we desire.
Yeah.
But most of us know people who, like, I would say probably one of the most contentious things for most everybody would be money. Like having the means to do the things you want to do and have like financial freedom, quote unquote. But the people who, I don't know about you, but I've known people in my life who have... what I would think of being financial freedom, like from a trust fund, where it was like that was given to them. They found a way to find hills and valleys in other places,
right?
Whether it's alcohol or drugs or pornography or whatever.
Yep.
And so we were designed, well, the most cliche thing I'd ever say, but sort of paraphrasing, like there cannot be hills without valleys. So
sure,
we can't we can't even know what a win is without some loss. But he said, look, so I'm going through this thing and I'm almost going bankrupt and I'm trying to build this organization. And he said, he was playing golf with a mentor. I'm going to mess this all up, but you get the point here in
yep.
a second.
Yeah.
He's like, and someone said to me, like, look, they said something to him, and here's what he said. He's like, look, of all people, I'm a fighter pilot. I should know that the only way a plane can take off is into the wind. So if you want to truly achieve the most in life, you want to fly in life, you want to be the best of the best, you better damn well start running straight into the wind. And there's gonna be days, weeks, months, and years where all you're doing is running straight into the wind.
Yeah.
But eventually take off. And so that was just an amazing thing I needed to hear at the time for sure.
Cause, yeah, right.
You know, look, I've lost more Emmys than I've won, for the record. And but like, you know, winning is fun. I want to wake up
sure.
every day and I want to win, but it's all about the hills and the valleys, and it's all about being willing to run headfirst in the wind. If you truly want to achieve greatness, the rest, you know, if you don't, you know, be mediocre. That's your deal. But like, if you want to achieve, it's going to hurt. You're going to get cuts. You're going to have things that are going to hit you in the wind,
yeah.
and you got to decide, are you willing to continue running in the wind if you want to take flight?
Yeah, right. Thank you for thanks for taking so much time. I'm flustered. It's been a long day for me too.
All good.
I'll let you guys go to your go get your drinks, hon, and all that kind
we'll
of
see
stuff.
Where that leads.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate
thank
it,
you, man.
Thanks,
buddy.
Thanks, dude. Okay, I hope you enjoyed my chat with Nick Nanton. I always love getting to spend time with him, and I always end up being inspired and overwhelmed and just really proud of my friend. Please take some time to check out Nick's show, In Case You Didn't Know, with Nick Nanton, and also his documentary film, Operation Toussaint. You can find them both on Amazon Prime. I will put applicable links under the show notes for today's program. I'm also going to remind you once again about our Patreon page, because it's very, very important. We need some more people to sign up on that. It's patreon.com/turniton. That is patreon.com/turniton. Please, please, please consider becoming a patron of the show to help us keep the lights on over here and to help the shows keep coming your way regularly and for free. It would mean the world to me. Do me a favor also and give me a follow on the socials. I'm at Michael J Music on Facebook and Twitter, and also at Michael J Official on Instagram. We also have a new Instagram account for the show, at Turn It On Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, I also encourage you to go and check out any one of the previous 56 episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast fix these days. Next week's episode will be going up just a bit later than usual because I'm headed out to Canada in a couple days for a week's worth of shows with Aaron Goodvin, and I still don't exactly have my act together as far as working on the podcast while I'm on the road, but I'm figuring that out, and I'm going to get that fixed. So rest assured, there will be another show headed your way late next week. Thank you, as always, for listening, everyone. It really means a lot to me that you like the show so much, and I will catch you all again soon here on Turn It On.